Well, good morning and welcome, and it is good to have you here this morning. Before we dive in, let me go ahead and dismiss the youngest among us. There are a few of them floating around. Thank you, Moses, Wally, and Brianna. Brianna, do you want to get Everett? All right, well, it is really good to be together. Let me invite you this morning to turn to Deuteronomy chapter 26. We are going to continue working our way through the Jesus backstory. We have been at this for the better part of a couple of years now. We're working our way through the Jesus backstory, the backstory that is the Torah being the first five books of our Bibles. It's this idea that in the same way that each one of us has a backstory, right? Each one of us has a history of experience. Each one of us has good times and bad times, all of it giving shape and direction to who we are here and now today. And in the same way, Jesus, he too has a backstory. It's found in the Tanakh, in the Old Testament, more specifically in the Torah, again, the first five books. What is a panorama of experience, good times and bad, all of it giving shape and direction then to the life and the teachings of Jesus. And so with that, we've been working our way through, taking it parsha by parsha, the Torah divided into what is 54 parshiot. And today we come to what is number 50 of the 54. We've been through 49 of these over the last couple of years now. In Judaism, they takes them a year. They take one parsha each week throughout the year. But for us today, we come to Parsha Kitavo. It picks up at Deuteronomy 26 and verse 1 and runs through 29 and verse 8. And so with that, let's pick it up then right at the beginning. Parsha Kitavo, chapter 26 and verse 1, it begins, we read, Vehaya. Vehaya, which you actually don't see up there, not in the English at least, because it is not translated. It refers to something that is happening or an occurrence. We could translate it, let it be known, or as it shall be. Vehaya, and then we get Kitavo, which translates when you have entered Kitavo Heoretz into the land, Asher Adonai Eloheha, that the Lord your God, Noten Leha, is giving you. And so shall it be when you have entered into the land the Lord is giving you, the Lord your God is giving you. And then he goes on, he says, as an inheritance, and have taken possession of it and settled in it. And then from there, Moses, keeping in mind here, he is nearing the end of his life. And this is what is considered to be his final speech, his final words to his fellow Israelites. And he goes on to speak then of regulations around the offering of first fruits. We read, take some, verse 2, of the first fruits of all that you produce from the soil of the land the Lord your God is giving you. And then if we drop down just a bit, notice at 26 and 11, it says, we read, then you and the Levites and the foreigners residing among you shall, it says, rejoice. You shall rejoice. What is from the Hebrew simha? And it means to be filled with joy. Right? To be filled with joy. Take these first fruits that you produce from the soil of the land the Lord your God is giving you. And then it says, rejoice, rejoice, right? Rejoice in the blessing that God has given to you. He then goes on and he speaks of setting up some rather large rocks. He talks about putting plaster on them. And then he says to write on them, he says, write on these stones all the words of this law. And then again, notice if we drop down to 27 and 7, we read sacrifice fellowship offerings there, eating them. And again, we read rejoicing, right? Simha, rejoicing, be filled with joy. Be filled with joy in the presence of the Lord your God. And then again, continuing on, Moses, now he goes on to, if you read through this, a kind of a laundry list. It's all kinds of, it's this list of curses. And so he says, cursed is anyone who, and it's being cursed for making an idol or for dishonoring your mother and father, dishonoring your parents. There's cursed for anyone who withholds justice, anyone who moves the boundary stone of a neighbor. And then notice once again, we drop down 28 and 45. It says, we read, all these curses will come on you. They will pursue you and overtake you until you are destroyed because you did not obey the Lord your God and observe the commands and decrees he gave you. Verse 46, they will be a sign and a wonder to you and your descendants forever because, and then here it is, because you did not serve the Lord your God, it says joyfully and gladly, right? Simha. You did not serve the Lord your God, Simha. You did not serve the Lord your God filled with this joy. And over again, as Rabbi Jonathan Sacks tells us, joy is one of the fundamental themes of Deuteronomy as a book. Might be surprising, but he says, joy lies at the heart of the Mosaic vision of life. From the Rabbi David Foreman, he says the reason is that joy has actually been an undercurrent in the whole discussion that the Torah has been having with us. Now, some of you might remember all the way back in the very first Parsha we did, which was 2.5 years ago, I think, when we started, Parsha Bereshit, right, which translates in the beginning, and it's there at Genesis 1 and 1, we read, God created the heavens and the earth, right? So, meaning the light, the sky, the ground, right? The vegetation, birds of the air, fish of the sea, right? God created the heavens and the earth. And then in Genesis 1 and 31, it says, we read, God saw all that he had made, so the heavens, the earth, everything in it, including man and woman, including you and me. We're right here in Genesis 1 and 31, you and me. In verse 31, it says, God saw all that he had made, and it was very good. Good here is from the Hebrew tov, and it means good, absolutely. It also has a very heavy dose of joy. It has a very heavy dose of joy. In fact, we could translate this, God saw all that he had made, and it was filled with joy. God saw all that he had made, and it was filled with joy. And we see evidence of this really then all over the Tanakh, all over the Old Testament. Right, this idea of simha, of the joyfulness of creation. From Psalm 65:11, it says, we read, you crown the year with your bounty, and your carts overflow with abundance. The grasslands of the wilderness overflow. The hills are clothed with gladness. The meadows are covered with flocks, and the valleys are mantled with grain. They shout for joy and sing. Psalm 104:14, he, meaning God, he, God, makes grass grow for the cattle, plants for people to cultivate, bringing forth food from the earth. And then we get this list of three things. The first one, wine that gladdens, right? Wine that brings joy to human hearts. Jeremiah 33:10, it says, we read, this is what the Lord says. You say about this place, it is a desolate waste without people or animals. Yet in the towns of Judah and the streets of Jerusalem that are deserted, inhabited by neither people nor animals, there will be heard once more the sounds of Simha. Once more the sounds of joy and gladness. Proverbs 23:24, it tells of the joy of that is found in children. The father of a righteous child has great joy. A man who fathers a wise son rejoices in him. Verse 25, may your father and mother rejoice. May she who gave you birth be joyful. Proverbs 27:9 compares the smell of a perfume, the goodness of perfume, with that of a friend. Perfume and incense bring joy to the heart. And the pleasantness of a friend, the simha, springs from their heartfelt advice. Joy that is experienced, right, in the midst of the blessing, right? And we can often experience that kind of a joy. We experience a joyfulness in the midst of blessing, and yet it is also a joy to be found even in the midst of the hard stuff of life. It's a joy to be found even in the midst of when things aren't going so well. We read of such a story. It's found back in Exodus. You might remember this from a couple of weeks ago, Parsha Kitetzeh. At this particular time, Israel is in Egypt, and remember, they're in bondage, under oppression. God raises up Moses, leads them out. And then they are out in the wilderness, and as you might remember, as we read that text, the Israelites were often, at different times, without food, without water. They were being attacked. I think 2 weeks ago, the Amalekites, they were being attacked. They were vulnerable. And along the way then, you might remember, there was all kinds of grumbling, right? The Israelites were really good at grumbling, at complaining. And yet, we read the later biblical poets reflecting back on that experience. And from Psalm 105:43, we read how God brought out his people, it says, with rejoicing, with simha, his chosen ones with shouts of joy. And then we kind of see this continue, keeping in mind that the Israelites, when they entered into the promised land, it was not all peaches and cream, right? They continued to be attacked. They continued to be under bondage to foreign empires. And yet it was their faith, their trust in God, looking to the day when a new Moses would come. And those, we read, those the Lord has rescued will return. They will enter Zion with singing. Everlasting joy will crown their heads. Gladness and joy will overtake them. Which is why, if you've never connected this, which is why at the announcement of the birth of Jesus, it says, I bring you good news that will cause you, that will cause great simha, that will cause great joy. Meaning this is not just a joy for someday, right? It's a joy for this day. Not at all, right, referring to a future day, but a day right here and right now, even in the midst of the very hard stuff of life. And in that sense, this joy is not so much an emotional feeling as it is an attitude. It's not so much an emotional feeling as much as it is an attitude of the heart. It's an orientation toward life. We see this most notably in a letter written by a follower of Jesus by the name of Paul, written to followers of Jesus in the Greek city of Philippi. Mind you, when Paul writes this, he is not sipping martinis on the coastline. He is in a Roman prison in chains. And yet he writes, what is phroneo in Greek? It's this idea of having the same mindset, the same attitude, the same orientation. And with that, over and over, we read all through this letter. In fact, they call it the letter of joy. All over this letter, he writes of this orientation to joy. He writes of this attitude of joy. In fact, Philippians 4:4, Paul sums it up. He writes, rejoice, right? Simha in the Lord. Rejoice in the Lord, he says, always. Yes, in times of blessing, absolutely. And in the very hard stuff of life, we are called to be oriented, to carry an attitude of joy. And then he says again I say, rejoice. And then it's interesting because then he dials down into what is translated contentment, autarkes in the Greek. And it's interesting because autarkes can be translated pervasive joy. There's this idea of satisfaction that's part of it, but it can be translated to pervasive joy, right? This attitude, this orientation of joy. And this is where I think then it lands for you and me. Because as Paul kind of reveals it here, it is in our discontent then, it is in our discontent that we are robbed of our joy, that we rob ourselves of our joy. We are, in many ways, much like this English proverb, as a rule, man's a fool. When it's hot, he wants it cool. And when it's cool, he wants it hot. Always, always wanting what is not. The psychotherapist Christine Weber, she wrote a new millennium. And she captures this sentiment. She writes, "Sadly, it comes as no surprise to me that so many people are unhappy at home and work. It seems that people's lives do not live up to their extremely high expectations. It is," she adds, "it is particularly worrying to see so many people dwelling on morbid thoughts, with a large proportion simply exhausted, exhausted by life." She says, there is no joy. And notice Paul here, he continues on, it says, picking it up in verse 12 here, Paul goes on, he says, "I've learned the secret of being content." In other words, I've learned the secret of pervasive joy. I've learned the secret of this attitude, of this orientation toward simha. He says, in any and every situation, whether well-fed or hungry, whether living in plenty or in want, right? No matter the circumstance, no matter the situation, whatever it is that is going on in your life right now, he says, I can do all this, right? I can live a joy-filled life through him who gives me strength. Through him who, that can be translated, through him who empowers me. Through him who empowers me. I can live a joy-filled life through the one Jesus who empowers me. Now, the reality is we do live in a world of discontent. I would say even more, we live in a world of discontented people. And yet, it's not just the people out there. Right? I can complain and grumble as good as any Israelite. Unlike Paul, maybe, when I'm hungry, for sure, and I've got a laundry list of things that I want. Right? How often I live myself an orientation of discontent, an attitude of discontent, and yet the invitation Paul offers us is to orient, right? Orient my heart, orient my mind, orient my attitude toward joy. As Rabbi Sacks, as he puts it, joy lives not in thoughts of tomorrow, but in gratitude and celebration of today. Or to use Phil's words this morning, in the now. Right? Joy lives not in thoughts of tomorrow, but in gratitude and celebration of the now. Again, not for someday, but for this day, right here, right now. Right? This attitude of pervasive joy, right? Paul says, rejoicing in the Lord. And again, I say rejoice, which invites us to consider, and I want to invite us then to sit for a few minutes in just kind of a space of reflection together. And as we do, to maybe ask, in what or whom do we find our joyfulness? In what or whom do we find our joyfulness? Another way that could be asked is in what or whom am I putting my trust? In what or whom do we find our joy? Is it my stuff, my possessions? Is it in my 401k, my bank account? Although if you looked at my bank account, you wouldn't find much joy there. Right? Is it the job? Is it the titles? Is it the letters after my name? Is it my accomplishments? In what or whom am I putting my trust, right? Is it in my own strength? Or is it in the strength of the one who empowers me? And then with that kind of gratitude for Jesus, we can then also express a gratitude for life. To borrow the words of Rabbi Sacks here, for what or whom do I offer gratitude and celebration today? Right? For what or whom do I offer gratitude and celebration even right now? And I thought maybe one of the ways to explore that would be to simply sort of examine, to take inventory, and I'm not asking you to do this out loud, I've made my confession, but to take inventory of our grumbling and our complaining, of our discontent, right? And to turn each grumble, to turn each complaint then into an offering of gratitude, into an offering of thankfulness. Instead of maybe complaining about the children interrupting, maybe we give thanks for their curiosity and their interest. Maybe instead of complaining about the dirty dishes, we give thanks for the food that we have received. In what or whom do we find our joyfulness? In what or whom am I putting my trust? For what or whom do I offer gratitude and celebration today? So let's sit together for a few moments in quiet, and then Mike will come and lead us in a closing song. Ve'haya kitavo el haaretz asher Adonai Eloheha noten leha. And shall it be when you have entered into the land the Lord your God is giving you.